This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order by going to rxbar.com/Andrew and using the promo code Andrew. That's rxbar.com/Andrew. Promo code Andrew. What's the tech? Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by my favorite person on the planet, Paul Theroux.
Wow.
You know, I almost called you. I almost called you Rich Stambolian, which is my co-host on another show that I do, on my wrestling show.
That would have been embarrassing for both of us.
And I called him Paul Theroux this morning. I had to redo the show three times because first I said I was doing What the Tech. Then I said I was doing Mat Men with Paul Theroux. Which is kind of like a fantasy of mine that I do a wrestling podcast with you. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people have
it would had be a lot of exposition because I'd be like, what's happening here exactly?
Okay. This is a great idea. We'll do. Okay. And I want to make this a super show. So I've gotten in with the young guys on YouTube, Paul. You know, I'm having this little midlife crisis at the age of, you know, my mid 30s. It's sad.
I hope this isn't your midlife. Now.
Well, at the rate I'm going, it might be. I'm having like this little thing where I'm like, okay, I gotta adapt, right? I gotta adapt with like the YouTube guys, and I'm like tagging along these.
Yeah, you're gonna wear the hat backwards. You're gonna talk the lingo. You're gonna be one of those YouTube jerks.
I do put my hat on backwards, and I have sleeveless shirts. So I think I'm down. I got this going.
You're trying.
Yeah,
you're trying.
I got this down. But the problem is, I don't know. Like these guys are making money. Like, people are just funny. Yeah, I was on a show 2 weeks ago. A guy gave $50 to the show to see my tattoo.
Yeah.
And then he was deeply disappointed.
I write 50,000 words a week and I make nothing.
to get
7 days
ad.
A week.
Yeah, to get
I can't
to
go
get
to family
ad.
Events because I'm too busy. I guess there are different ways of doing it.
That's the way to do it. So, what I'm thinking I'm going to do is do like a funded show. Like, okay, here are the donations. This is what we're going to do. We're going to raise money for a week. $1 per show, you know, $1 per person, whatever we could do. And me and
Paul's
you.
Paul's going to dye his hair pink.
We'll get to that. It'll eventually get to that point. But in the beginning, we'll watch you and I. Like, it'll be enough for you to come to New York. Mm-hmm. We'll have a slumber party. And we'll watch wrestling. Okay. And it'll be you like asking questions.
Only if we can be on the couch, like under a blanket, eating popcorn.
Here's the reality. I just want to live that fantasy.
Right.
Just a fantasy of mine, I want to live it.
I'm on board. I could do that.
Yeah. We'll figure it out. Guys, we do have a ton of stuff to talk about. WWDC, it was yesterday. It was. And I was deeply enjoying your commentary.
Anything happen? I don't remember.
I was deeply enjoying your commentary. I'll tell you, that's what happened with me. And There's a lot of stuff that I actually liked, and I was surprised at the stuff that I like. People were like, well, that's not a big deal. But to me, it was kind of like a big deal. I actually enjoyed a lot of the things that they were discussing. So I want to talk about that a whole lot more. I mean, obviously, you have a ton of opinion on this. So and you were doing it a little bit more in depth because you were doing the live, you know, Twitter commentary. So I'm going to go to a break, but I want you to think about where you want to begin with this because there's a lot of elements here. A lot of elements.
Yes, there is. Yep.
Okay. I mean, the biggest news, obviously, and I'll say it now, the biggest news for me was iOS app integration in the Mac. Not with this version of Mac OS, but the next version of Mac OS.
I have a question about that, but you might be right.
So all that and a whole lot more, obviously, but I do want to take a moment and talk about our great sponsor, and that's Casper. I actually am ordering another Casper, and that's the Casper beep. I get money. See, when that beep happens, Casper is happy with the read that I'm doing, and they actually give me money.
It's not because there's something stuck in your wall.
No, I'm going to lose my mind with that beep. You know the battery? I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, Casper, but this is going to, you're going to love this, right? This is the battery. I got it out. It's still beeping. I don't know what to do. this is what's happening now. This is the battery. I've disconnected everything. I have no idea, other than shutting off this thing, there's no way to turn this beep off. We're just living with it at this point. And fortunately for me, when I go to bed, I don't have to hear the beep because I sleep so well on this Casper mattress. It's one of the most comfortable sleeps I've ever had. And in my own opinion, it'll probably be the most comfortable sleep you'll have also. Here's a great deal. You save an additional $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew and entering the promo code Andrew when you check out. This is, and here's a cool thing about them. I actually want to upgrade my Casper mattress because that's how I am. Even though there's nothing wrong with my mattress, I want the latest and the greatest. And they have a whole line of mattresses now. Originally, it was one mattress, and it was perfect for me. But now I kind of want to try their Wave, and I want to try, you know, I kind of want to experience the other versions of their mattresses. And I can, and I'll get a discount because I'll use my own offer code when I buy it. But the great thing is you get a 100-day guarantee, sleep guarantee. You can't determine by a couple hours or a couple minutes if the mattress is for you. So you get 100 days risk-free. Considering the fact that we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, I think it's pretty important that we kind of sleep and we commit to it and we see how it works out for us. I absolutely love Casper. They've been with the show for a long, long time, and I deeply appreciate them. And listen, I deeply appreciate discovering them because the process of setting this mattress up was actually, it's an experience. It comes in a box. You've done it, Paul. Comes in a box. You open it up, you cut the plastic, and you're like, how good could a mattress be in a box? I'm going to tell you, better than the couple $1,000 mattress that I had spent at the big box stores a couple years prior. Casper.com/Andrew. You save an additional $50 towards a select mattress purchase by going to Casper.com/Andrew. I want to thank them for supporting the show. And of course, I want to thank them for continuing to somewhat keep me sane with this ridiculous beep that goes on in my house. Paul, I'm haunted by this. This beep is over. I can't do anything about it. I'm just living with it now. I just have no control of my life. So where do you want to begin with this WWDC coverage? Because
here's how I want to begin. I want you to go to Twitter and look at the picture I just tweeted.
Okay. Twitter.com/TheRot.
You know, in the fog of war that is my live tweeting of the event, it's possible that I miss a couple of words here and there.
Okay. So this is the image that you posted. It says for you. Is that the image?
Yeah. No, well, oh, right. Yeah. Bring it up. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes. If you can. Can you show it?
Suncast, I need your help.
So, all right. So I'll just talk over this. Yeah. So when Craig Federini said, you know, we get asked this question, are you guys going to merge iOS and macOS? And of course you think he's going into this thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I was thinking in the back of my mind, that is not what people have been wondering. The question is whether you're going to bring iOS apps to the Mac, right? And anyway, he said no, because they're not merging the two platforms, but they are in fact bringing iOS apps to the Mac. And then the date 2019 kind of came up, and you just said it too. And I sort of thought the same thing, but you know, when using the new version of macOS, and then I went back and watched the video again, because again, I was goofing on it at the time. Actually, that's not exactly what they say. This app and three others are iOS apps that are in macOS 10. Mojave right now.
So what I'm looking at right now, and for the people that are listening, we're looking at the news app that they were gloating over.
This is in fact the iOS version of the news app running on the Mac, I believe. Yeah. And there were three others. So I thought what they said was phase one was them working on this stuff internally. Phase two was they're going to give it to external developers. But actually what they said was phase one, we're going to use this in macOS right now, you know, this year. And then in 2019, we're going to let iOS developers do this as well, bring their apps to the store. In other words, this importing process.
So
that app right there is an iOS app.
Is an iOS
running
app
on the Mac.
So this is interesting because,
you know, you can converge an eagle and a turkey or whatever the frick, whatever it was.
Two turkeys. Okay, so here's what I understand, right? The new news app is going to be running, I didn't know this. This is all brand new to me, right? Mm-hmm. What does this mean that maybe the Photos app that we currently have becomes an iOS app, and the iTunes app that we currently have on the Mac becomes a... Because think about it, iTunes is there. You're not downloading iTunes. It's with the OS. So does iTunes become an iOS app?
No. No, the reverse happens. Apple Music becomes an iOS... iOS app that can now be run on the Mac. That makes tons more sense. I've been wondering why they didn't make an Apple Music client for the Mac for, you know, ever since they announced the service. It seemed kind of weird. It also seemed like the other opportunity there would be to make a web app, and that web app could run on Windows as well, and that would make some sense. So
That's interesting.
This is a very Apple... Sorry.
Was that the only new application that they announced?
No.
For the Mac?
I don't have it up anymore, but no. It was Stocks, maybe Voice Recorder. I don't remember. There were four of them. Yeah. Stocks was one. You know, News is one. I could look it up if you want.
I'm curious if this all converts over. They move over to...
Well, I think everything. So. I think, you know, look, you know how Apple does things. Is they do things slowly. So I think what's going to happen is the first version, this version of Mac OS X, Mojave, will have those four apps. I think that will probably be it. And then the next version, you know, they'll bring more, right? Of course they will over time. And I'm sure the big applause moment of WWDC 2019 is going to be Apple Music, right? Yeah. Why wouldn't it be there? So let me see if I can bring up the list. Where is the list? Because they had a picture of it. God damn it. So close. Here it comes. Okay. News. Yeah. News, Stocks, Voice Recorder, or whatever that's called, and the HomeKit app, or I think it's just called Home or something.
Huh.
Those are the four.
So... let's talk about this, right? Do you want to stay on Mac? Do you want to talk about the changes to Mac first? Let's do that. The changes to Mac are minimal, right? We have dark mode.
Well,
I mean, right now. Go ahead.
I don't know. I think this cuts to the heart of what you were kind of talking around a little bit earlier. You said something to the effect of, you know, a lot of people were complaining about these things they announced, that people are writing articles now where it's like, here are the 15 features Apple announced that other people had before. Like, that's always going to happen. And there's kind of an industry trope. It's sort of like the phrase, Microsoft always gets it right on the third try, right? And for Apple, that phrase is something like, Apple doesn't really invent too much, but when they do implement something, they always seem to do it right, you know? So they might come late to the game, like dark mode, right? Every other OS has a dark mode. Well, except for iOS, but whatever, they will eventually. I have to say there's something to it, you know? So it's easy for someone like me to get on Twitter when they're announcing this and kind of make fun of the things as they come out. They seem to copy like an Animoji feature that, Samsung had that they copied from, you know, like it's kind of a weird cyclic thing, but dark mode is a feature that Windows 10 has, for example, on the desktop. And I'm sure people who know Linux will tell me that there are dark modes in different Linux UIs, whatever. Here's the thing. Dark mode on Windows 10 is a dumpster fire. And I say that both as a daily user of the system, as a tech enthusiast, as a someone who has covered Windows professionally for over 25 years, and as the author of a book called The Windows 10 Field Guide. And the reason I say that like that is having to document the way that things work in Windows makes me painfully aware of how terrible and inconsistent things can be. So off the top of my head, the way I will describe this is in Windows 10, you can go into settings, personalization, colors, not theme, but colors. And you can say, I want to be in what's called a dark app mode is how they describe it in there. That will change some of the system to a dark mode. It doesn't help or do anything to any of the desktop applications that are built into Windows 10, Paint, WordPad, Notepad, etc. It doesn't affect some of the store apps that are built into Windows 10, including Microsoft Edge. In Microsoft Edge, you have to go into settings, and then you can turn it to a dark theme. They use the word theme, not mode. It's completely disconnected from the rest of the system. Some apps let you configure their theme or app mode separately from the system, or they can link to the system. It's all over the map. And so if you like dark mode, you're going to have huge spots of white space on your screen all the time, depending on what windows you have open. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a disaster. And the other problem with this system is if you wanted to switch in and out of dark mode, maybe you want dark mode on at night, because not everything switches along with it, you have to go and manually change a bunch of different things to make everything dark or make everything light. And that makes it tedious to go in and out. The other thing I just want to throw on top of this is, well, Microsoft does have something called, I think they call it night light now. It doesn't matter what it's called, but it's that thing that removes the blue color from the color cast on the screen at night. It does work automatically. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Does it work well for you? And I'm going to ask you this because I've used something called FLUX Flux, right? Yeah. F.LUX. I've heard different ways. So I use that on my Mac and it worked great. Like I actually liked how it worked. I don't like how the Mac works with the night.
Okay. I don't know how the one on the
work. But have you used Flux before?
Yeah, I've used Flux and I've used the feature built into Windows.
How do they compare? It works great. Okay.
All I want from this feature, and this is true no matter what device I'm using, is for it to come on a set schedule every day and for it to just be automatic. I set it to the warmest possible color on every system I use. In fact, just last night I was using a smartphone and I thought to go check to make sure it was on because the screen seemed really white to me. But when I looked, it was on. And when I switched it down to off, you could really see the difference. I think I just got used to it or something. That's what Windows has. So on the Mac, they've never had this dark mode, but you know, a couple of years have gone by, whatever, people have been wondering why don't they do this, especially on iOS. But they implement it and it's beautiful. It's not stark black like it is on Windows. It's just a darker shade. It's really nice.
Yeah.
There's an adaptive quality to it. I can't remember the name of the feature, dynamic display, I think, where it will actually change not just the background image, but the shading on all of the UI elements, like the menu at the top, the dock at the bottom. So that it actually kind of gets darker over time.
Look how simple that looks, and, right?
Yeah. It's consistent too. It impacts every window of every app that is built into Mac OS, unlike the Microsoft solution, which does not. Now, for developers to add this feature to their apps, they're going to have to do that manually, right? You know, if you're Adobe with Photoshop or, you know, BB Edits Author, whatever it is, you will have to explicitly build this in to your apps. And so there will be situations where apps either have their own dark mode or don't respect the system dark mode or whatever it is. And that's, you know, that's, of course, I mean, it's a system feature, whatever, that's what happens. But the fact that they were able on the first beta to come up with something that is consistent, better looking, and more functional than what Microsoft has had in Windows 10 for years is personally frustrating to me.
Interesting.
Because I complain about this stuff. I complain about the inconsistencies. And what I hear back from people is you complain too much. Like, that's the feedback I get, you know, and it's like, but I'm kind of fighting here for this thing to be better. I prefer Windows 10 to the Mac by a wide margin, but I look at what this kind of thing, and it fits into that again, like you kind of mentioned this up front. It was like, yeah, I get it. Like they do things late. They take a long time sometimes, but then they do it. And it's like, this is really nice. Like, this is really well done. And this is a good example of that. I don't mean this, you know, they make mistakes, obviously, and they do terrible things. And as a company, they're awful. But as far as like the software goes, it's interesting to me that they can get something like this right on the first try. And by the way, even in that shot, if I'm not mistaken, let me look at it. Yeah, that shot was taken in dark mode. That app, which is an iOS app, is taking on the dark mode as well. It's visually consistent with the system. Microsoft can't figure this out, and it makes me crazy.
But I wonder why do you think that is? Do you think there's too many moving parts on the Microsoft side?
I think it's because they're terrible. And I want to be clear what I mean by that. I mean fucking terrible. What I mean is there is still a culture at Microsoft for all of the change that's occurring. And it's good stuff, no doubt about it. All of the inclusion and accessibility stuff. I mean, how can you complain about it? But the one thing culturally that Microsoft can't get over is that they reward shipping and they don't reward fixing. So back in the old days when Windows was on this 3-year release cadence thing, there was an A team in the Windows side and they made the next version of Windows. That's what they worked on. As soon as that thing was done, they handed it off to the B team, the guys who were working on the service packs back in the day. And then they went back to the next version of Windows again, and they started working on the next big thing. That team never got into the mentality of finishing the job. Now, the thing they shipped would have all kinds of inconsistencies and bugs and problems. And the service packs would sometimes fix some of them, but they would never actually go back and make everything consistent and right. Here's something you can look at right now on your own computer. This is a great example of this kind of thing. This is the lack of finishing the job, right? Of being consistent about giving a crap about the details. Run Notepad on your Windows 10 computer right now, right? This is a system utility built into, and then also just for the hell of it, run Paint. And then look at their icons in your taskbar. And what you will notice is that the Notepad icon is glass. The cover of the Notepad is glass. Why is it glass? Because in Windows Vista, glass was the big new thing. That's the icon from Windows Vista. They have never changed it since.
Is it an oversight? Like, is that, honestly, Paul, do you think that's an oversight?
This is people not giving a shit. And this is why it makes me crazy. Because this thing that I care about very deeply clearly means nothing to the people that work on it every day. And it makes me nuts. And then Apple comes out and does a thing where the whole system's totally consistent. And whatever you think about how long it takes to release new Macs, blah, 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 whatever it is. Clearly, the people working on that software, I mean, look, I know there are going to be gaps and mistakes, whatever, but they clearly give a shit. And that's huge to me. It really matters.
I think it's, to me, you know, I think that's a management problem, right? The culture from the top has not affected the culture.
It's a cultural problem, for sure.
It is. Yeah. It 100%. Yeah. You know, overseeing that, you know, I'm in the corporate world now, right? And I see this. And, I make those mistakes too, but there's always someone else to catch that problem. And when you don't prioritize things like, I don't know, maybe catching an icon that's, you know, 15 years old, that's a fundamental flaw. But that extends to other things.
It's crazy.
It's not about the icon, if you think about it, but it really is. The icon is a good representation of the overall
issue. Using that as a simple example. I don't mean to suggest I found an icon that's terrible. Look, Windows sucks. I mean, I still love Windows, and this is just something you can see very quickly and say, oh, yeah, look at that. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
You know, but there's this, look, I get it. We're in this transition, blah, blah, whatever. But there's all this stuff built into Windows that's kind of legacy desktop stuff. And then there's all this new stuff in Windows. It's like mobile app crap. And the mobile app crap gets all the new stuff, and the desktop apps, which in many cases are just as useful, if not more so, than the new stuff, just sits there and languishes looking like it's Windows 2000 still. And, you know, like I said, the dark app mode or the dark theme, as I would call it, that Windows 10 has, does not impact, well, two of the apps that I use every single day, which are Notepad, actually, and Paint. But it also doesn't impact desktop applications like Skype or desktop applications like Microsoft Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, whatever, all of which have their own theming built in that's separate from the system. You know, that there's no option in those applications to say match the operating system, be consistent. Yeah. You as a user have to do that yourself. That's stupid.
Yeah, it should just be smart enough.
It's badly designed.
I want to.
I didn't mean this to turn into a weird Microsoft rant. I just want to frame it so that it makes sense, because it's really easy to complain, and I do it every day about whatever it is, Apple, WWDC, and the Mac, blah, 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 whatever. They don't release stuff, but you know, you got to give them credit in certain areas, and I think this is one of them. They care about it. Like you can tell they care.
You know what's interesting? So since I use a Windows machine way more often, like I have this in my office, right? Like I have this MacBook in my office, and I was talking to someone. They said, you know, you talk about you use Windows more now, but you're always using a Mac. Well, yeah, because this is what's in my office, and I work in my office, and, you know, I'm doing my Photoshop stuff right now. I'm editing a picture that most would deem inappropriate, but that's what I'm doing right now today, you know?
Right.
I have these like weird projects I got to do for work, and I need something with a little bit of horsepower. And this MacBook has more than my HP does, if you break it down. So, but something that initially for me, you know, everything is an adjustment. Everything from top to bottom. If you change browsers, it's an adjustment. If you go from Chrome to Firefox, it's an adjustment. For me, I didn't really have too much of an adjustment going back to Windows. And the things that I thought I would kind of have an issue with, it was totally a breeze. But the way that certain gestures work in certain applications, the way that Chrome responds to drag, you know, to pinch and zoom, things like that are still a problem. And I it's not Microsoft's fault per se, but you know, I'm on my Mac right now and I'm pinching and zooming and it's totally, you know, effortless. But on my HP, it's still like the stuttery pinch and zoom.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I for sure. I mean,
you know, but why?
You know, Windows is the bastard child of a thousand fathers. I mean, I, you know, it's hard in the Windows side because there are so many OEMs, so many hardware devices, so many configurations, you know, so many combinations of software and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, you know, it's funny with the way the world has evolved, and I've talked a lot about how I kind of like what has happened to the PC, not because it's down, but because we've stopped using it for all this nonsense, right? Most people don't do anything other than work on a computer, and it makes it kind of a pure experience for me. Like, I really like that aspect of it. But this is the type of stuff that kind of gets in the way of that. You should be, and I do this. I mean, I install the same applications. I make the same configuration changes on probably dozens of different PCs a year because I review computers. I have different computers coming in and out of my house. And I see these inconsistencies in, I would call that performance or reliability that varies from PC to PC. You'd think the experience would be fairly consistent. You know, if I have a modern quad core processor, 8 gigs or more of RAM and, you know, speedy SSD, blah, 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 whatever, this should work fine. And mostly it does, but sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's just, it's hard to make this kind of criticism because people will always say, yeah, but, and they'll point to this happens over the Mac and this does this. And yeah, fair enough. I mean, but I'm just talking about the, you know, because you brought it up, the experience on Windows and why is it not better? It's probably fair to point out too, Microsoft has been working to make it better, right? They're trying to move to this more reliable system. I think they're making a mistake the way they're doing it, but you know, they obviously understand the problem probably better than anybody because they see the telemetry data. They know what's going on. You know, they're trying to work on it too, but the world is having a hard time moving past what Windows is.
I don't.
We just have not talked about the Apple stuff at all. I apologize for that.
It's fine. Listen, this is the beauty of the show, right? We get off on these tangents and we talk about whatever we want to talk about. But I do want to dive into another conversation here. But before we do, I want to talk about our great sponsor, and that's RX Bar. You get 25% off your first purchase by going to rxbar.com/Andrew and using the code Andrew at checkout. I pretty much eat an RX Bar every single day. And for a limited time, every order will receive 6 free product samples, including each of the new RX Bar flavors, which I'm very excited to get. I should be getting one soon. And the RX Nut Butters. RX Bar Nut Butters. Try saying that 3 times. Free sample offer ends June 30th. You're also on top of the 25% off. So this is great. You actually get a whole bunch of stuff. So what is RX Bar? It's a protein bar that uses very simple core ingredients. So it's all going to be based on either peanuts or almonds, egg whites, and dates. Easy breezy. There's no additives. There's no preservatives. There's no fillers. This thing is great. It's gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, whether you like savory or sweet, chocolate or fruit flavors, there's something for you. And they have 3 new flavors, mango pineapple, peanut butter and berries, and chocolate hazelnut. I actually want to try the chocolate hazelnut. There's a store down the block from my office that I stop by every day. I get my coffee and I get my RX Bar because it's awesome. Go to rxbar.com/Andrew, get $25 off your first Andrew. And for a limited time, when you order, every order will get 6 free samples of the new RX Bar flavors. So this is awesome. Free sample offer ends June 30th. So order now, rxbar.com/Andrew. Let's go back to Apple.
Yes.
What do you think? So why don't we do like a rapid fire thing? What do you think of the new app store? Yeah. The new Mac app store?
On the Mac. Well,
is it still a nightmare or is it any better?
It looks better. I mean, you know, they kept talking about stories, right? If you're familiar with the iOS App Store, the way they changed it in iOS 11, they have a story every day about some developer, some game or whatever it is. And I don't know that people go to an app store to read stories. I appreciate they're trying to make it better for discovering new content, apps, games, whatever. But I find that a little tedious, but whatever. It's prettier for sure. This is, you know, the Mac App Store has the same problem as the Microsoft Store. So I'm going to talk about Microsoft for 20 more minutes. Which is that there isn't a lot of content in the store that's any good. And so they also announced plans to improve that. They're working with all the major app makers, Adobe, Microsoft, Barebones, who makes BB Edit and so forth, to make sure that their stuff is in the store. And that's huge. And, it's funny how this parallels Microsoft. But I think the biggest thing that's going to change, and this is what won't happen until 2019, is the ability to put, for developers to put their iOS apps, specifically their iPad compatible apps, because they've already been designed for the big screen and so forth, in the store. And that might be what puts it over the top.
And it'll be seamless. Nobody will even know.
Who knows, knowing Apple, I'm sure if you paid for an app on iOS, you'll get it now, you know, through the Mac Store for free, of course. And cause it's the same app. And, I always knew, as soon as I heard any rumors about this, I think all of us have kind of had this dream anyway. As soon as you see an iPad app and you talk, you can see how they've evolved over the years. It makes sense on the Mac. You can tell it's going to make sense. All they have to do is some plumbing work, and that's what they're doing. And you can see it right there. I mean, I'm not saying the news app is necessarily a great example, but you can see it in that app. That's an iOS app, and it looks normal. You wouldn't think anything of it on the Mac.
Yeah, I think it'll be seamless. They won't tell you it's a Mac. It's an iOS app that's ported. I think they'll just call it. It'll be in the Mac App Store, and that'll be the thing. But what does this mean for the future of, you know, developing on the Mac platform? Are you as a developer going to continue developing applications? Like, if you have an application on iOS and you have an application on the Mac, are you going to continue developing the Mac app, or are you going to just say, you know what, we're just going to refine our iOS app, and this is now our app?
This is tough, because in a perfect world, Apple would do rather is support progressive web apps natively in the store and in their Mac platform. And that would allow developers to create one app that would run everywhere. Apple doesn't want that, but allowing developers to write one app that runs on both iOS and the Mac, that's a good goal for them. And that's exactly the type of way they would solve this problem. So app developers will have to kind of handle that on an app by app basis. You know, if you're Adobe and you have Photoshop CC or whatever they call it these days, you're not going to release that as an iOS app. It doesn't make any sense. It's a big professional app. But the number of apps on the Mac store is like this size, and the number of apps on the, you know, iOS store is like this size. So the opportunity here is humongous to easily port your apps to this other store. Now, I don't think, given the size of the two markets, that it's going to make a huge difference for developers, but more is always better. And it certainly helps the Mac, and that's good for Apple. It's good for everyone who uses a Mac. It's good for the Mac platform. And it's very similar, if you think about it, to the situation in Windows 10, where Microsoft's trying to do the same thing. The difference is Apple has a popular app platform that they can bring to the desktop. Microsoft does not.
Yeah, very interesting. So I'm just looking at this as a Mac user now, right? And if you're a developer, you would definitely want to be one of the first in that store, because...
Yeah.
It's minute.
Yeah, because it's a wasteland.
It's a wasteland. So I think it's going to be very aggressive.
To do it again.
Yeah, I see this. I mean, and that says a lot about Microsoft, right? About how their app store failed and how essentially nobody wanted to develop for it. But if you have a successful, I mean, let's look. Let's look on my phone. Actually, let's look on my iPad, right? Because that's the better comparison. What are the top apps in the app store on the iPad?
Oh, in the store. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because let's look at this. Because we get a pretty good understanding of...
Actually, the thing you might want to look at is...
I swipe like I'm like a rich old lady. Oh!
just a little doily. What you might want to look at is some particular app categories, right? Because, you know, games, whatever. I'm not sure games make a lot of sense. But like productivity apps, you know, one of the things that's notable on the Mac and and iOS is the weird number of like markdown editors and photo editors and things like that. You know, there seems to be kind of a creative market there, and there are probably some really professional looking iOS apps that would be.
I have not been in the App Store on the iPad for a while, so I want to get the top chart. So best new updates. I don't want that. Cool and coding kids. Top paid. Okay, you want to do top paid or top free? Top free. There we go. The top charts right now. Top paid app is Procreator. So it's like a sketching app. That's the number one app right now. paid $9.99.
No, that doesn't make a lot of sense for the Mac, okay. Right?
Doesn't
unless
make sense.
They somehow make the Apple Pencil work on your trackpad or something. Which
actually, this is, you want to talk about a wasteland. Let me just go down this top 10 paid. Mm-hmm. Paid. You got Procreator, which is useful, right? You got Notability, which is it's a easy note-taking and for the pen. There's GoodNotes mm-hmm. for, again, note-taking. Then it goes down this very weird Toca Life. I don't know what Toca Life is.
I don't know.
Toca Life is a weird app for kids where you, I believe you draw and you do this thing. That is the number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 spot in the Mac paid app store. Then you got Sky Guide, PDF Expert, Toca Life again, My Script. This is, again, for the pen. We're seeing a trend here. Plant Snap, well, you know, plant the problem, Identifier. Go ahead. Sorry.
This market is too big.
Yeah.
You know? So what you're really looking at is, like, here's what's popular this week. But if we were to look at this thing a month from now or whatever, it would probably look really different.
So what if we looked at free, right? Free is a good example. Right now, the top free apps on the iPad version of the App Store, because mm-hmm. they change it. Netflix, right. YouTube, yeah. Gmail, Weather Channel, Chrome, Messenger.
Way, just real quick, don't forget about Chrome because that's on the Mac. But a lot of those things you're saying are things that people on the Mac would today access on the web.
Yes.
YouTube, Netflix, and so forth.
Yep.
And I don't know what the battery life implications are, but you know, the native Netflix app, for example, would allow you to download movies that you could watch online. I don't know if, does Netflix have an app on the Mac? I don't know if they have that.
They may actually. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I've wouldn't never it be done easier it. I just go to the web.
The one?
Yeah, I just go to the web.
Right. But I mean, if you wanted to watch the one on a plane using your laptop, how would you do it?
I don't know.
You would spend $800 on an iPad. That's how you would do it.
Yeah,
so
probably.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe there is one. I have Netflix. No idea. But from Netflix's perspective, it is better for them to have the single iOS app that works on both.
There's a whole bunch of third-party Netflix apps.
Okay,
I don't know if any of them.
Netflix app.
No.
There you
let's
go.
See. We got Messenger, Hulu, Facebook, Calculator, Amazon Prime, YouTube Kids, Unicorn, mm-hmm. Spotify, Google Maps, Google Drive, Google Docs, Amazon, Google, Microsoft Word, Kindle, mm-hmm. Wish, Pandora. These are all stuff that you could do on the web. Google Photos, YouTube TV, coloring, Google, Pinterest.
It's great. It's like, that is a great list of apps. Yeah. And
it's stuff that you don't really need an app for, though. You know?
No, you do need an app for a lot of that because those apps support offline usage.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They do.
This is just a win. It's a gimme. You know, if you're Netflix or you're YouTube or Hulu or whatever those things you said, all of those guys, if you're saying with very little coding change, which is how they described it on stage, I can just allow this thing to run in the Mac, of course I'm going to do that. Of course. It's a gimme. And this is why you can kind of see the point of what Microsoft was trying to do. What they didn't have was a really popular app platform on the mobile platform. You know, so they did combine the past with a turkey, you know, that's what,
and it's just, yeah, pretty much.
It's not super interesting, but Apple has the chance to do this right. And again, I wrote an article, you know, Apple's copying Microsoft when it was rumored they're doing this. Here they go again. But you know what? This is that thing all over again. They're late to the party, but they're doing it right.
So what else stood out for you? We didn't even talk about iOS here, but you want to talk about iOS changes?
Let's go to iOS. It's kind of a mixed bag here because
emojis.
No, I was going to go a little more substantial for the first one. They talked about the performance improvement stuff and specifically on older devices. This is in sharp contrast to every single release of iOS ever. There has been a growing suspicion in the user base that Apple specifically engineers new versions of iOS to run more poorly on older versions of their hardware to spur hardware upgrades. In fact, last year it was found that they were, in fact, explicitly doing that, and Apple actually admitted to it and apologized. And then they put some software in that would help us determine how this, you know, how that battery performance ratio behaves, whatever. So this is a big change. Now, you'd have to be some kind of a cur or whatever to not applaud this. In some ways, it's a good thing, but when a company can get up on stage and say, you have an older version of our hardware, and with this new version of our software, you could see a performance improvement of up to 40%, tells me that the last version of your software was crap. Yeah. There is no way that a version over version upgrade should ever offer that kind of a performance jump. So I'm not saying
were they talking about the iPhone 6S, right? Is that what they kind of displayed?
That was one of the examples they used. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll take this for the win that it is, but I'd like everyone just to pause and think about what's really happening here for a moment, because I think it's important, which is, I don't actually believe they explicitly engineered iOS to run poorly on old versions of iPhones or iPads or whatever. What I do believe is that they just didn't care, that I just leveled this charge against Microsoft about not giving a crap about the details. This is the type of thing they didn't give a crap about, and they did it on purpose because, again, they were trying to sell new hardware. That's how Apple makes money. They sell you iPhones. You know, giving you a free version of iOS, which is something they brag about every single year.
It's free for everybody.
It doesn't earn them any money, right? What gets them money is when you buy a new phone. So I do feel like they didn't care. I don't think they harmed it on purpose, but I think they kind of let it slide and they focused on optimizing for the new hardware, and that they did that on purpose. So now they're not, and it's good PR. But my God, what were they doing? This is the 10th anniversary or whatever. We're 10 years in now, aren't we? Or now I guess 11 years.
Yeah.
What have they been doing for a decade? Like, what's how could performance have never been a thing that whole time? You know, the executives must have been running the system on their old phones from last year for a little while.
Do you think they realized they're like, wait a minute, this isn't working well?
Yeah, why is this thing slower? Didn't they notice? It's disingenuous. That's all.
So there was a couple things here. We'll go through digital health. Mm-hmm. They've done more with that. Notifications. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a greater control over notifications, so you could group notifications now. So it's not like 500 things listed. There's a do not disturb, which they already have a do not disturb. But this
do not disturb while sleeping, I think.
While asleep. Yeah. Now they have... In other words,
it's like an automatic feature. Like, I think that's cool. It's like the nightlight thing. Like, you know, you turn it on. Yes, I want this on every night. Smart. It's a good idea.
You can send the end time for do not disturb. Screen time, a new app that provides daily reports of how much time you're spending on your app. This says a lot about us as people, that we need our phone to tell us, guys, it's enough. Go away. You could limit app usage. Who's going to use that? Other than
parent
parents.
Might use it for their kid. Yeah.
I'm talking about adults.
I don't know. You know, you almost want to walk around a restaurant and just lean into people and say, you know, the phone has a feature that will monitor your app usage, because you idiots are all looking at your phones rather than talking to each other.
Yeah.
And maybe this would be a moment where you could get off the phone. I mean, I do think this kind of smartphone addiction thing is real. I think we all collectively experience this to some degree or another, you know, so maybe it's not such a bad idea. It's something about maybe the maturation of the product.
So they have four new Animojis. A new tiger, a koala, a T-Rex, and your own Animoji, which is called
the Memoji, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing they kind of took from Samsung, which is weird because Samsung put their own version of Animoji in.
And they got people said it was creepy. People said it was crappy. Yeah. People were making fun of it. And now we're going to see praise.
But now Apple's doing it. And, you know, in typical Apple fashion, I mean, it is better looking for sure. It has more of a Disney cartoon look to it. But yeah, I've never been a big fan of this digital avatar thing. I mean, this goes back to
Xbox,
the original Miis. Well, before Xbox, they had the Miis on, the Wii. They had, Microsoft copied it with Xbox avatars on Xbox 360. And now in the mobile world, you can, you know, these little, we're so taken with non-word ways of expressing ourselves. I'm not sure how to say that. Enough. Surely there's an emoticon for that.
I found this part interesting. Facebook, FaceTime group calling up to 32 people.
Yeah.
That number.
That seems like a lot of people on a phone.
It does seem like a lot, but that number is interesting to me. Uh-huh. I'm curious why. It's not just like, what's the most we could do? 32? All right, let's go with 32. There's a reason for this. Right. And I wonder if this is going to lead into something else for them to go after teleconference and telecommunication for corporate use, for enterprise use, and how they're going to do that. because, you know, enterprise, obviously, this is something that happens daily. Telecommunication is a...
Right. Like, everyday... in other words, instances in which consumers need 32 people on a call are not very big.
Not very big.
But in businesses that, you know, 32 is still pretty rare, probably. But...
So right now, I'm very interested to see where this goes, because... Is this Apple trying to get into enterprise on some sort of level? This isn't for you and 32 of your friends to chat. You know what I mean? There's something behind this, and I'm curious what the fallout will be. Because additionally, too, I mean, obviously doing group calling, right? You could do group calling, which is great. But the fact that you could do up to 32 is a sign that they are planning something else to go along with FaceTime. And I wonder if FaceTime will eventually have its own telecommunication, you know, platform for enterprise use, if this is their way of kind of entering in that field. Because right now, and this is something that I know a little about, you know, other than Skype, you really don't have too many legitimate good quality options. Obviously, you could use Cisco's interface, or there's a couple other ones, but really Skype is the only one that could do it. And I wonder if this is Apple's way of saying, hey, listen, if you come into our ecosystem, you don't need to do it this way, but pay a monthly fee and have whatever. You know, they could kind of jump into this on this level.
Is there a FaceTime client for the web? Because that, you know, they need something. They either have to do that or bring it to Windows.
Well,
right?
Everything's going WebRTC eventually. I mean, that's the path. So I can see them doing a web client. Like, you can't do web to web, but somebody will have to have the host, and then you could do a web.
I mean, for whatever it's worth, you know, in the Microsoft sphere, when we do calls with companies, sometimes they'll set up like a Skype for Business link, you know, for you to call in. And if you don't have Skype for Business, which no one does, you can download this web. It's actually like an extension for your browser, but it's basically like a web client. And then, you know, you do it in the browser. It's fine. It works great. You can send audio and like we're doing right now. Like we've done, this is actually, we're using a
vMix
thing
call.
Right here.
Yeah. We're using WebRTC right now.
It's not Skype. So it doesn't, you don't need a native app for that to work.
Yeah. I need it on my end.
No, I know. Right. Of course. But, you know, this is how do you attack a market where 80-something% of the computers used by people are PCs, and you don't want to make PC software. We can make a web client.
Yeah. I'm curious if they're going to go down that route. The other thing was photos, which I was actually very surprised at the lack of upgrades to photos, because Google Photos is kicking their ass. I mean, seriously.
This was a catch-up release, and it was specifically a response to Google Photos. And also, I'd say Facebook a little bit, too. There are just features out there in other services that they just don't have. And I used the iPhone for quite a while. I'm not switching to the Mac. But if I were, and when I did use these platforms, I would never use Apple's services for this stuff, ever. There's just so much better stuff out there. I suppose there's some integration value to having, you know, you pay for iCloud storage, you put your photos there. It works on your Mac. It works on your phone. It works on your iPad, whatever. But man, that is the very definition of non-portability. It's what I think of as like a one-way dead-end street. And I would be very leery of only being able to access my stuff using Apple products. Like, I just don't like that. I don't know. There's something about that makes me nervous.
Siri got a little upgrade. Siri shortcuts. You can now feature It lets you feature third-party apps. Shortcuts app. That was a
pretty significant upgrade, by the way. Yeah, I mean, well overdue and necessary.
Yeah. AR Kit 2 was interesting. They demoed this. Obviously, they did the Lego demo where you build a Lego set and then you hold your iPad, and now everything is moving around.
Maybe this is my own little mea culpa moment or something, but I don't think AR. I don't know. I feel like I'm not sold on AR, and I think the stuff that they showed wasn't particularly compelling to me.
Sold about AR in general, or sold about AR
like I don't, like sold on AR as some major next generation, it's going to impact everybody kind of technology. There are obviously these use cases The one I like is you walk into a Museum of Natural History and there's a dinosaur skeleton and you hold up your phone or your tablet or whatever, and you can see what the dinosaur actually looked like on top of the skeleton. That's kind of cool. You know, I think, but you know, how often, okay, you have a school trip, you do this thing one day, whatever. I mean, so I kind of wonder sometimes if we're not looking for niche scenarios where this makes sense. Like, wouldn't it be cool if you could, you know, play with Legos, and some of them were virtual Legos, and it's like, hey, I guess I'm an adult.
You play it once and you're done. Yeah.
But you know, the funny thing is, so just in an odd coincidence, last night my wife and I were sitting out back and it wasn't dark yet, but I could see a star, but it was clearly a planet because it was so bright. And I pointed it out and I said, you know, that's got to be a planet. I mean, look how bright that thing is. You can't see any stars. And she's like, oh, I wish we could figure it out. And I said, well, we can figure it out. So let's Google it. I said, that's southeast. I said, let's, you know, hey, Google, what planet is in the southeast? And actually it didn't tell me, but it gave me some website. And what I found was that it was Jupiter, by the way. And there's another even brighter planet, Venus, which is directly west. And so we walked around the house because the house is blocking west. And sure enough, up in the sky, there was another, it looked like a star, but it was a planet. And I was like, that's really cool. We figured this out. And so my wife's fiddling around on her phone and she holds it up and she's looking at the sky with the phone. I said, what are you doing? And she says, I downloaded an app that shows you the constellations and the planets overlaid on real life. It's kind of an AR thing when you think about it. These things have been around for a while. This is not brand new. I know that. But sure enough, she held it up to that planet that I identified as Jupiter, and it was. And then hold it up to the other one, and sure enough, it was Venus, just like we had thought, just from the description. And it was kind of a nice confirmation, right, of the research we had just done. But it was also very cool because you can kind of move around and see the constellations, even though you couldn't see the stars yet.
And that's AR on the lowest level, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, just for whatever it's worth, as we were sitting there, you know, a plane went overhead, and I joked with her. I said, hold that up and see what flight that number that is, you know. And she said, yeah, she says, Bob Smith sitting in flight, you know, C-20A or whatever. And we kind of laughed, and then I thought, you know, that's probably possible to do that, right, when you think about it. Like, you probably could do that based on your location on Earth. The data of flights is somewhere. There might be an app where you could hold up your phone and it says that's Delta Flight 1782.
That's really interesting.
I bet that exists. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very
so anyway, I sitting outside finding planets in the sky, also in niche usage, for sure. We're not going to do that every day. But it's an interesting example of how it's a nice visual way to find something out in this case. And maybe it just kind of comes, you know, it kind of filters into the experience.
The other thing that they announced, which didn't get a lot, Apple CarPlay will let you use Google Maps, Waze, and other third-party mapping sites.
I know. Huge.
Which is that's actually a really big, a really big thing if you have CarPlay. I don't have a car with CarPlay. I'm actually buying a car with CarPlay. I'm getting a Volvo.
Yeah. And you're going to see Apple Maps usage in cars drop to near zero when this happens.
It's terrible, right? Because everybody almost tells me that their navigation is terrible and they opt to use the OEM's navigation.
I don't even have an opinion about it. I have no doubt that they've improved it dramatically over the years. But you should never hurt yourself by not using Google Maps. That's silly. No, it's silly. I don't care what you think about privacy or your data or you hate Google. Not using Google Maps is dumb. It's dumb.
What do you use in the car? Waze or Google Maps?
So we don't, we use Google Maps on a phone. We don't have a car that has a built-in navigation. Well, I'm sorry, that's not true. My wife's car has built-in navigation, but it's probably NavTech or something. We actually never thought that this thing was ever up to date. And you may recall over the winter, we had those crazy snowstorms. We got trapped and everything.
Yeah.
And on Google, you know, it shows like a red line when it's really bad traffic. And I suddenly realized looking at our in-car navigation system, which is not apparently connected to anything that we can tell, it had, well, there were triangles on the road. And I pointed out to Stephanie, my wife, and I said, that thing's showing us traffic. And she's like, that's impossible. And I said, but it is. Look.
Oh, you
it
know why? You know why? Do you have XM connected to it? Was this last week?
Oh, no, this was over the winter. This was over the winter.
Because I had XM. That happen on my Lexus. I always because it has built-in XM, and with XM you have the XM traffic and reporting, like it does the updated. So every now and then they do a free trial. Yeah, well, it's supposed to connect to the navigation, but it's
actually
free.
My My wife has paid for XM over the years, and I just, my only question is whether she still does it. I think she does. I think we pay for this.
So
you think that's attached to the navigation system of the car?
Wow. So she probably doesn't pay for the navigation. So when I got my car, they gave me a year of free XM and XM satellite, you know, the traffic that's connected to the navigation. So when that went away, so did the traffic updates. But whenever they do a free trial, they turn it on for the navigation. So last week they did the Memorial Day trial. I was getting all the traffic updates.
No, we probably pay for it. We didn't get this car new. It was used when we got it, and we've probably had it for a couple of years now.
Quite possible that they haven't, they've been paying for it, the traffic update. They have no idea.
Well, I mean, my wife, the problem is when you get in the car, it's her car. So she, of course, she wants to use the navigation in the car. The screen's bigger, but it's a little old fashioned. It's like a 2013. So she gets it, like, just dialing the thing to get the address. She's like, it's so tedious. And then it didn't seem like it was up to date. So she said, well, screw this. I'm just going to use the thing on my phone. It's way up to date. It's much easier to use. And so we just kind of never paid attention to it. It's just interesting to me, in a year and a half, maybe 2 years of ownership of this car, it wasn't until we were stuck in a snowstorm with nothing to do that we were just staring at the screen. And I suddenly realized that thing is actually providing, that's live traffic right there.
Yeah.
It's weird how it looks. It's like it uses triangles for some reason, like one of those road signs or something, but strange.
Very, very interesting. I know that this, I'm sure. Is there anything more before we wrap it up? And by the way, we're doing our bonus show. So if you want to watch and continue watching, stay tuned. If you're watching live, we're going to continue doing this for a few more minutes at least. And
much more, right? I'm sorry.
I don't know. I'm sure next week. I'm sure next week we'll find some more stuff.
TVOS, Dolby Atmos, and then the watch thing, which I didn't think was particularly interesting.
Yeah.
Apparently also this was a developer show. I mean, who knew? I think the people in the audience, especially the people watching from home, were probably really confused because there was a video about developers at the beginning, and then there was a bunch of consumer announcements for 2 hours, and then there was a video about developers at the end. It was like, what do these things have to do with the stuff in the middle? Almost nothing. But, that's what Apple does. It's like a marketing event.
That's what they do. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Go sign up for Therot Premium. You get access to all these amazing things that Paul's doing. Great articles, great shows, and a whole lot more. You could continue watching this live. Guys, fund us. You want us to keep doing this? We want to do more stuff with you guys. I have all these things planned that I need to execute, but I need to do it with your help. You could help us get all these ideas out there by funding our Patreon campaign. That's patreon.com/whatthetech. You go there, fund us $1 per show. And it's a humongous, humongous help, obviously. That and we're going to be posting weekly or daily. I got to talk to Suncast how we're going to do this. Amazon products that I personally like. So I'm going to start doing that in the coming weeks. It got really dark here. I wonder if it's going to rain. Looks like it. Guys, that's it for this week. I'll see you all next time. Take care.